morning, everyone. Thank you. Please be seated. Who's leading these witnesses this morning? That's one of the witnesses.
Tēnā koe, Your Honour. Beverly,
yes, Mr.
I'm leading the witnesses this morning.
Oh, you're here. Okay, thank you, Mr. Beverly. I wasn't sure if Mr. Ryan was going to be continuing. Thank you.
Over thank you, Your Honour. Thank you, Your Honour. The authority calls...
I think you have junior counsel present in the background.
Yes, sorry, Your Honour. We have got... I've got a rather inconvenient arrival at the front door, but we'll sort that out.
All right.
So, yes, the authority calls Robert Ray Penter, Your Honour.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Penter. If you just... Good morning. Because we don't have you in person here, let me ask you, do you solemnly and sincerely declare and affirm that the evidence that you'll give during this hearing will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Beverly.
Thank you, Your Honour. I'll turn up by Mr. Pinter.
Morena.
Could you please confirm again for the court your full name?
Robert Ray Pinter.
And you filed a statement of evidence on 28 July 2023, is that correct?
Yes.
And a statement of rebuttal evidence on 11 August 2023?
Correct.
And you confirm the contents of those if it, statements of evidence remain true and correct?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. If you could just remain and answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Peter.
Thank you. Mr. Conway?
No, thank you.
Ms. Chapman?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Do I need the speaker?
Yes. If the...
I can't see you.
I don't think there's very much we can...
That may not be a problem.
Mr. Pinter, if there's any problem about you understanding the question because you can't see the person asking it, please just say so.
I will. Thank you, Your Honour.
Well, my name is Jill Chappell. I am counsel for OG Fibre Solutions. And to be clear, my client has only a few matters in these proceedings that it seeks clarification about in relation to the point source discharge provisions. And it completely accepts the notion of betterment, but it wants to make sure that the provisions in the plan are not so prescriptive that industry is disincentivised from making improvements. Now, note paragraph 7.8 of your evidence in the context of talking about point source discharges, Mr. Penter, you say that PC1 is not a place to adopt the status quo for consent users. Is that correct?
I would have to register that evidence, but I'm happy to take that as a correct statement.
Okay, well, I'm not going to take it terribly far, except just to ask whether you accept generally that industrial discharges have been adopting a continuous improvement approach for many years now.
I wouldn't be able to categorically say that all industrial discharges have all adopted a continuous improvement process, but we'll certainly accept that some have, particularly when they've had to re-consent their discharges and lift to the understanding of the day at the time of their consenting application.
Yes, thank you. And you were familiar with the application that OG made in relation to the upgrade of its wastewater treatment plant at Kinleith Mill?
I would say I'm aware of it rather than very familiar with it.
Yes, fair enough. But would you agree that in that sense the status quo is really that existing industry continues to make continuous improvements?
Yes, I would accept that there is a practice of continuous improvements with the charges. Yes.
And you could say, couldn't you, that the plan is clarifying the extent of that continuous improvement that is being required to be made in terms of the proportionate reduction of discharges?
I would say in relation to my evidence that what our position is, the authority's position, is that in relation to a reasonable mixing zone, we've made statements about that in relation to point source discharges.
Yes, and you've also made statements about the status quo as well, haven't you? And that's what I'm asking you about.
Yes, in terms of the plan needing to move beyond accepting the status quo, in terms of being able to give effect to Te Reo Waimana, not acceptable to accept as a right, reasonable, don't always apply to all point source discharges.
Those are two separate issues that you're talking about there. One is reasonable mixing and the other is the status quo.
Okay.
Yes, okay. All right, well, I think it's probably fair to say that you would agree that the plan is seeking to ensure that continuous improvements occur and that industrial discharges understand the extent to which they are required to continue to reduce their discharges. Is that fair?
Yes, that is fair. Yes.
Thank you, nothing further.
Thank you. Mr. Muldoon? No, thank you, sir. Thank you. No one here from Mathematica Piaco. Mr. Malone?
No, Your Honour.
Thank you. Ms. Garvin.
No, Your Honour.
Thank you. Anyone here for Bathurst? All right. Mr. Minhinnan.
No, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Ms. Ongren.
No, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Tumai.
No, thank you, sir.
No one here for River Iwi or Hauraki. No, thank you. Re-examination, Mr. Beverley.
No re-examination, thank you, Your Honour.
Thank you. Your Honour, any questions, Mr. Penta?
Yes, just a few questions. Morena, Mr. Penta, this is Judge Williams speaking. I don't know if you can see me.
Morena, sure.
Morena. Just a couple of questions I had for you, Mr. Penta. In fairness, I put a number of questions to Mr. Tavalco yesterday about the involvement or the lack of involvement or the role of Tangata Whenua in point source discharge matters, because it struck me that in relation to policies 12, 13 and 14 there seems to be little reference to the involvement of Tangata Whenua in decisions around determining appropriate duration of consents granted, for example, and where there are issues of replacement discharge permits being involved. Do you have any sort of comment about the potential for Māori and Tangata Whenua to be involved in those processes?
I would only say I think it's entirely appropriate that Mana Whenua are involved in processes, those processes that relate to point source discharges or matters affecting the awa. I would prefer to River Iwi to speak to those matters much more directly than I can, sir.
Mm. Okay. And I've also raised it with a number of other council witnesses, and I think the response has been, well, there is engagement with Hapu and Iwi through co-governance arrangements and co-management agreements, which are kind of in the background, but I suppose I had a view that that's one component of things. There doesn't seem to be any reference to it here. And I wonder if you also had a view about that perspective which has been put.
I think it would be safe to say that from the authority's perspective we would be supportive of River Iwi direction on that matter if there was a desire from River Iwi to see that particular part of the plan strengthened in relation to supporting engagement of Mana Whenua in matters arising from point source discharges or from the plan itself.
Yes. Okay, that's helpful. And just finally, you have said in your evidence in chief at paragraph 3.7 that the WRA doesn't support all proposed amendments to point source discharge provisions to the extent that the assumed reasonable mixing will occur. And I think you mentioned that this morning in answers to some of the questions from Ms. Chappell. As I understand it, mixing is unavoidable. The issue for Tangata Whenua and Hapu and Iwi is as to whether or not the discharge should occur at particular locations, for example, at Mahi Ngakai and or Wāhi Tapu areas. And so you would, I'm assuming you're saying that there should be a no assumption that reasonable mulching should occur in those particular areas. Is that what you're trying to indicate?
I think you've summed it up extremely well, sir. And what I would add is that from the authority's perspective, what we were concerned about was a prescriptive approach that reasonable mixing would always be available for particularly point source discharges. And in our view, that's wholly inappropriate given the status of the Turi Kaimana. And I think from my perspective, we're asking land owners to adopt a number of approaches to address the effects of their activities on our waterways. Mm. It's entirely appropriate that those that discharge through a point source, which is, I would suggest, to far more controllable rather than it having to happen necessarily, ought to equally ensure that they're giving effect to Turi Whaimana by not necessarily jumping straight into a reasonable mixing zone, which in my mind is essentially a sacrificial part of the river to enable the discharge to take place and ultimately meet conditions of consent somewhere downstream from where the discharge occurs. So I don't think that's entirely appropriate in every instance for every point of discharge.
So you're trying to, I suppose, understand that what you're saying is the decision that should be made first is as to whether or not the discharge is appropriate or there's an assessment that it's reasonable to mix.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Pinter. That's all I have.
Mr. Baden, Mr. Hodges, and I have no questions. Is there anything arising out of His Honour's question? Questions? No? Thank you very much for your evidence, Mr. Pinter, and you're excused now.
Thank you.
Mr. Devlin, and I think we've got Ms. Rademacher there on screen.
Thank you, Your Honour. If we could please call Ms. Rademacher.
Good morning, Ms. Rademacher. I'm Judge Kirkpatrick. I need to ask you whether or not you solemnly and sincerely declare and affirm that the evidence that you're going to give to this hearing is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Devlin.
Thank you, Your Honour. Tēnā koe, Ms. Rademacher.
Morena.
Morena. Could you please state your full name for the court?
Vari Rademacher.
Kia ora. And could you confirm that a statement of evidence was filed on your behalf on 28 July 2023?
Yes.
And similarly, a statement of rebuttal evidence on 11 August 2023?
That's correct.
And you confirm that the contents of those statements of evidence remain true and correct?
I do.
Thank you. If you could just remain and answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Conway.
Thank you, Your Honour. Morena, Ms. Rademacher.
Now, if you've got the microphone. Yes, thank you. Sorry, Mr. Conway.
Yes. Good morning. I'm not sure if you can see me, Ms. Rademacher. The camera didn't seem to be working for, but it's Matt Conway here for the Regional Council.
Morena.
Oh, that's fine. It's working? Great. Now, I just had a couple of questions for you around the point source discharges joint witness statement. There's one line in there on page 401.0173 where you're answering questions around policy 12 and question 3. And the question that is being addressed here is the one that relates to reasonable mixing and the wording that Mr. Trebelco has proposed after any appropriate reasonable mixing occurs. Do you recall that part?
Yes, I do.
And in that section, you've indicated you don't think the words any appropriate reasonable mixing is clear, and so you have proposed to replace that with some alternative wording. You've also indicated you would support the alternative wording proposed by YPRDC or an alternative that's not specified there that would move the statement regarding reasonable mixing to policy 13. I'm conscious that this is probably in the context where, in line with Mr. Pinter's answers that he's just given, there's a degree of discomfort with having areas in the river where the water quality attributes are not being met. Is that a fair overall statement to start with?
Yeah, that's correct, and consistent with Mr. Pinter's evidence.
And so the various options you discuss in this row of the the table are to be seen in that context of that discomfort. But do you have, as between the various options there, is there a clear winner in your mind as to what's the best approach, if there is to be a reference to reasonable mixing?
I don't have a preference. What I'd like to see here is just a recognition that there may be instances where reasonable mixing is not appropriate, and wording that signposts that to users of the plan.
Yes, and in the scenario where, as per his Honour Judge Williams' question this morning, I guess his question reflected the fact that if you're discharging a contaminant into a water body, there will be a period or a location where mixing is occurring. The other way to look at that answer you've just given is to say, well, if that's going to occur in some situations, it may be that discharge is just in the wrong place. Is that your view?
Yes, that's correct to say.
Thank you, Ms. Ridley. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Conroy. Ms. Chandler.
No question, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Muldowney. No question. Thank you. Mr. Malone.
No question, Sean.
Ms. Garvin.
That's a long question.
Thank you.
Mr. Rademacher, it's Ms. Garvin for Genesis Energy. So Policy 12 does not state that resource consent applications for point source discharges must be granted, does it?
No, it's not.
And so the Regional Council will be able to decline applications for resource consents for point source discharges, wouldn't it?
Depending which role in the plan consent is being sought under, there are some controlled activities, I understand.
Sorry, to clarify, for a discretionary resource consent application.
Yes, the council will be able to do that.
Thanks. No further questions.
Thank you. Mr. Miller.
Thank you. Good morning, Ms. Rademacher. Daniel Mahalik or Fonterra. Were you listening in yesterday to any of the questioning of the other planning witnesses?
Yes, I did hear most of it.
There was some questioning by my friend, Ms. Tumai, in relation to Policy 12B1 and the reference to Section 107.2 within that policy. Do you recall some of that questioning?
Yes, I do.
Just reflecting on it overnight, I was just keen to get some clarification from you as to what you see the effect of Policy 12B1 to be.
What do you mean by that?
Maybe if I say it in a different way. So 12B1 is intended to set some parameters for the consideration of measures to deal with residual adverse effects. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
And then Policy 12B1, the decisions version of that, stated that the primary discharge does not result in significant adverse effects on aquatic life or toxic adverse effects.
Yes.
And that is in the context of either within or beyond the reasonable mixing zone. Would you agree?
Yes.
And so the inclusion of the introductory wording subject to the exceptions in Section 107.2 of the RMA, what is your view on how that is intended to apply?
So my reading of Policy 12B in general is to put some guidance around what is and isn't appropriate. So if you had a discharge where you had adopted the BPO but you still had significant adverse effects, then that may not be an appropriate discharge. I'm not sure whether the reference to Section 107.2 changes that in any way or adds anything to it, given that that is it's an RMA matter that needs to be considered anyway. I tend to think that probably it's confusing, this clause, and certainly given the conversations that have been had, it seems to be causing some confusion for the parties.
Sure. And so is your reading of this that it applies inside and beyond the reasonable mixing zone?
I would think so, yes.
Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Minhinnick. Ms. Olmer.
Yes, thank you, sir. Section 107.2. provides a qualification on section 107.1, which only applies after reasonable mixing.
Okay, sorry.
That's fine, it's possibly a legal matter. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Radman.
Thank you.
Ms. Tumar?
No questions, sir.
Thank you. And again, no representation for Iwi. No, thank you. Any re-examination, Mr. Beverley?
No, thank you, Your Honour.
Your Honour, no questions? Commissioner Meagher? No, thank you. That's very clear. Thank you very much for your evidence, Ms. Rademacher. You're excused.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Beverley, previously submissions were presented during the broader appeal by Mr. Ryan. I haven't found, I don't think, any specific submissions on point source discharges. Am I missing something, or do you have any submissions you wish to make?
Oh, I have no submissions at this point, Your Honour. I understood there were some matters raised in relation to point source discharges in the...
In the original submissions.
In the original submissions, sir.
No.
But nothing further to add beyond that.
All right. Thank you very much. For your attendance and for calling your two witnesses. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honour. Well done.
Now, we come back to you've got one more witness to go, haven't you, Mr. Malone?
I have, Your Honour, Mr. Hamilton.
Are you ready now?
Yes, Your Honour.
Very good. Thank you.
So I call Sean Hamilton. I do have a document that I want Mr. Hamilton to produce as an exhibit. It's a Cambridge Masonry treatment plant, that you can see. It wasn't attached to this.
Now, you'll need to repeat this when you get back towards the microphone. So if you give those documents to the registrar, I'll circulate them. Thank you. And let Mr. Hamilton get set up and then.
Hamilton.
Hang on, I think we've got a step to go first. Oath or affirmation?
Sorry. Thank you, Your Honour.
No, that's all right. You don't want this evidence to be disregarded for non-compliance with the legislation.
Do you solemnly, sincerely, and truthfully declare and affirm that the evidence you're about to give for this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore.
Morning, Mr. Hamilton. Is your full name Sean Matthew Hamilton?
It is.
Are you employed by GHD as the Waikato Regional Leader and Technical Leading Trainer?
I am.
Have you prepared a statement of evidence and statement of rebuttal in relation to those proceedings?
That's correct.
Do you confirm the contents of those are true and correct?
I do.
Were you in court yesterday, Mr. Hamilton?
Yes, I was.
Did you hear the questions that His Honour Judge Williams was putting to various people regarding the involvement or otherwise in the follow-up in relation to PC1?
Yes, I did.
And do you recall Commissioner Hodges making the statements he did regarding his experience in terms of wastewater treatment plants and the comments in particular about conditions of consent having the technology reviews?
Yes, I did.
Do you consider that there is anything as a Cambridge wastewater treatment plant consent that would be of assistance to the court in relation to those two matters in particular?
Yes, I think there are probably a number of matters.
Can you, do you have a copy of the document here that I just handed out?
Yes, I do.
Can you please tell me, on the front page there, it says Wakeley Regional Council, Section 42A report. I think you know what that is. It's a report of the officer making a recommendation whether consent is granted or not.
Correct.
Can you, is the, are the consents for the Cambridge Wastewater Treatment Plant actually attached to that document?
Yes, all of the discharge consents obtained are attached to that document.
And can you please identify the date of the Section 42A report? It's on page 29, Mr.
Yes, it is dated 27th of September 2023.
As far as you are aware, is this the most recent resource consent granted for municipal wastewater treatment plant?
Yes, as far as I'm aware.
Coming back to the questions that His Honour Judge Williams Commissioner Hodges, I mentioned to you earlier, can you please step the court through what parts of this consent in this document, including the Section 42A report, that you consider will be of assistance to the court in relation to those matters?
Yes, certainly. So I think that there are a number of sections of the Section 42A report which would be of interest. So I'll just make my way through that if I can. So the last paragraph of Section 3 on page 3, so that talks about...
Can you just give the members of the court a chance to turn to the relevant pages? So just keep an eye on them. You'll see when they're looking at you that they're in the right place.
We'll guide you, Mr. Hamilton, but you're certainly operating at a reasonable pace right now.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
So the last paragraph of Section 3 on page 3, and that last portion of the last sentence there talks about the very high quality of treatment and the support for the proposal of Mana Whenua and other parties, which is further outlined. If we turn over the page... this will be of interest to the questioning by Commissioner Hodges yesterday. So Section 3.2.1 on page 4 outlines the discharge quality from the upgraded plant. And I term it upgraded plant, but it's essentially a new wastewater treatment plant that will be built on the Cambridge Wastewater Treatment Plant designated site. So it talks about very stringent limits for CBD05, suspended solids, E. coli, and of note, that's down as low as 14 per 100 millimetres, there is summer total nitrogen loads in kgs per day, being 33.8, winter total nitrogen loads of 71.3, and total phosphorus being 8.3 kgs per day.
And just noting, Mr. Hamilton, I see at the top of the page there are comparative figures for the existing plant. I take it when you say it's a new plant on the same site or immediately adjacent on the same designated area.
Yes, so it's a designated site and the new wastewater treatment plant will effectively be built offline of the existing wastewater treatment plant processing system, and then at a point, once that's ready for commissioning, it will start to be transitioned over to it.
Thank you.
The next section I would like to point us to is
the last sentence of section 4.2.
And is that on?
That is on page 7. And that outlines that overall the activities have been bundled and are treated as a package, with the overall activity status being discretionary. If we turn the page over to page 8, I'd just like to read into the record section 6.1.
You don't need to read all of the text. I expect you'll be asked to produce this document in a moment. And you can just highlight that you want us to look at all four of those paragraphs.
Yes, if we can look at all four of them.
Well, just give us a moment then to scan those.
Just while you're there, Mr. Hamilton, I see that it talks about the engagement of a Kaitiaki group. Can you just tell me what the composition of that Kaitiaki group is? For example, you're talking about members of the group, including Ngāti Koroki, Ngāti Hāua, despite the Tainui. So the Māori members on that group comprise what proportion of the group?
So Mr. Mould spoke to that briefly yesterday as well.
Okay.
So it's approximately 60 to 70%.
Okay. So that's the group you were just speaking of?
Yes, it is the same Kaitiaki group.
And I see that Aokawa said they wouldn't participate. Why not?
Part of that there's been an earlier iteration where a short-term consent for Cambridge Wastewater Treatment Park was obtained in 2020 to provide time for this long-term solution to be developed and then consent sought.
Mm.
At that time, Rotorua was part of that Kaitiaki group. It was a discussion between mana whenua groups themselves in terms of who was best placed and appropriate to be involved in that Kaitiaki group going forward. And that was a decision between mana whenua. That it would be Ngāti Koroki Kaukura, Ngāti Hāua, and Waikato Tainui continuing on.
Okay, so they came to that position themselves, so Rotorua wouldn't be part of the group anymore.
Correct. Rotorua was part of that discussion as well, but it was not a project or Waipa driven decision.
Okay, thank you.
Judge Kirkpatrick, I'd just like to read out quickly just a portion of that last paragraph whereby Ngāti Koroki Kaukura Trust and Ngāti Hāua Iwi Trust provided letters of support of the application, including the proposed duration of 35 years. So on that same page 8, I would just like to paraphrase quickly section 6.2, which was another mode of engagement via the community liaison group, and key members of that were Auckland Waikato Fishing Game, Cambridge Community Board, and also members of the Kaitiaki group in Waikato Regional Council. So through the Cambridge consent process, Waikato Regional Council notified, and this is summarised in the top of page 9, Waikato Tainui, Ngāti Hāua Trust, Ngāti Koroki Kaukura, Fishing Game, Auckland Waikato, Rotorua, and among others the Department of Conservation as well. In section 7.1, also on page 9, summaries of concerns on a number of submitters. So Auckland, Waikato Fish and Game, originally submitted in a position of neutral on the application, and eventually minor concerns that Fish and Game did have were collaboratively resolved. And this is noted in the summary of concerns section of that table, whereby it's noted, appreciate the collaborative approach. There is disagreement with the method used to quantify nutrient productions, support the consent conditions, including technology review, offsetting unresolved from the short-term consent, which to see progress, and Mr. Mould was questioned briefly on that yesterday as well. Ngāti Kariki Kaukura Trust and Ngāti Hawa Iwi Trust submitted in support, originally wanting to be heard to preserve their ability to participate in a hearing, but once all other submitted points were resolved, they agreed to withdraw. It was noted in the summary of concerns section of that table, so they've been involved in the development of the application, including preparation of the Tangata Whenua Effects Assessment Report, and the submission stated, our Tangata Whenua Effects Assessment Report concludes that subject to the imposition of proper conditions or more conservative alternative conditions and satisfactory confirmation of implementing the non-conditioned mātauranga and mitigation measures, Mana Whenua supports the proposed Cambridge wastewater treatment plant upgrade.
There, Mr. Hamilton, can I get you to move to the question of the technology review conditions?
Yes, no problem. So if you turn to condition 16. So following on from some of the discussion yesterday by Commissioner Hodges in relation to common technology review conditions, conditions 16 through 19 of Schedule 1 relate to the confirmed technology review conditions. Condition 17 outlines a number of assessments that need to inform that technology review at several stages, being the 10th, 20th and 30th anniversary of consent. And condition 18, I think, is a bit of a differentiating factor where the onus is on Waipa District Council to implement the outcomes of that technology review unless it is infeasible to. But certainly the onus is on implementing the outcomes of that technology review. Part of the engagement with the Kaitiaki Group, initially, very early on in the project, it was discussed about what sort of process or conditions would be needing to be required to be in a position where iwi could provide support for the applications and robust technology reviews to ensure that the Cambridge Wastewater Treatment Plant was utilising most up-to-date technology and therefore delivering the best quality wastewater to the Awa, being the preferred discharge location. Is implemented and continually improved at those prescribed points throughout the consent duration.
Mr. Hamilton, can you please produce that to the court as an exhibit?
Yes, if I can produce that as an exhibit.
Which number are we up to? Is it 7? Sorry. Exhibit 7. Thank you.
One final question, Mr. Hamilton. In this whole process, how would you describe the importance or otherwise of the Te Whiwhaimana?
So the Te Whiwhaimana was certainly the underpinning approach throughout the whole process. Betterment in particular for the Kaitiaki group and the members there, delivering betterment for the Waikato River was front and foremost for both the group, and that has been taken through and highly and collaboratively adopted by Waipa District Council and the project team as well.
Can you please answer any questions that my friends of the court may have?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Mr. Conway.
Thank you, Your Honour. Good morning, Mr. Hamilton.
Good morning.
I'd like to ask you some questions about Objective 3 with reference to the joint witness statement that you are a signatory to. That was question 1 in the JWS. 401.0170, we have discussed the replacement of assisted with enabled. Now, you've noted three reasons in, on that page why you consider the term enabled to be more appropriate. And in particular, you've noted in the second reason there, there's no provision in TC1 that specifically provides people and communities to be enabled or that refers to enablement. You've got that there?
Yes.
And that reflected what you said in your evidence as well?
Yes.
Now, you're aware TC1 adds one chapter into the existing regional plan and in particular into the existing water management module?
Yes.
And in reason 3 there, you have noted that there are other provisions in other parts of the regional plan that do relate to enabling people and communities, including specific provisions relevant to discharges from wastewater treatment plants. Would you agree that it's important to read all of those provisions together in the context of a consent application for a wastewater discharge?
Yes, the regional plan needs to be read as a complete document and how it applies to wastewater treatment plant discharges. In the context of PC1, it provides an additional policy and objective context in which those are also.
Yes, and so it's not, from a planning perspective, a plan drafting perspective, it's not necessary to repeat what's in those existing objectives in the PC1 provisions, as it proposed to be read side by side.
I think it's good that there is consistency in terms of what it is that PC1 is trying to achieve, and Objective 3 being to provide for Waipa and Waikato communities or people within those communities is an important objective for consideration.
Thank you. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Ms. Chapman.
No questions.
Thank you. Mr. Mulder, no questions. Thank you. Ms. Garn.
No questions, Your Honour.
Thank you. Mr. Minhiller.
No questions, Your Honour.
Thank you. Ms. Omri.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Hamilton.
Good morning.
I see from your evidence that you were involved in Three Waters work. I'll just wait for the mic. I see from your evidence you're involved in Three Waters work for several local authorities in the Waikato region.
Correct.
And as well as the 2023 Cambridge wastewater plant consent, you were involved in the 2020 short-term consent application?
Yes, correct. That's the lead plan on that.
In your evidence at 3.13, you say that you support amendments to the offsetting and compensation provisions in Policy 12 because they provide greater clarity on where offsetting should occur and what offsetting would be seeking to achieve.
Sorry, what paragraph is it?
3.13 sub A.
You say of my evidence? Mm. Oh, yes, sorry.
Yes, and would you say that with the 2020 Cambridge application, the Waipa District Council was attempting to achieve betterment, that it would have been advantageous there if there had been a policy such as Policy 12 to clarify what offsetting and compensation meant, because I note in that application offsetting was proposed.
So offsetting was proposed in the context of undertaking a proof of concept offsetting pilot study. It wasn't imposed as an offsetting of the discharge per se.
Yes, and for that, it would have been advantageous for the Waikato Regional Plan to have some further provisions to identify what offsetting means.
I think clarification on where or what offsetting constitutes is advantageous. For the actual term consent, there were a number of sites investigated.
Thank you. So Fishing Game takes a slightly different view as to how we go about clarifying what offsetting and compensation means for the purposes of Policy 12. And one of the issues is the lack of clarity in that policy on additionality. Do you know what additionality means?
Yes.
And if I read from Dr. Corkery's evidence, she says, for example, gains in water quality due to fencing, waterways and wetlands cannot be counted towards an effects management package as stock exclusion for waterways and wetlands is an existing requirement. So that's the paragraph 51. So would you think that it would be beneficial to provide that sort of clarity in Policy 12 as to what can and cannot be counted?
I'm not sure that I've turned my mind specifically to that in any detail. Clarity in policy and how the policy is always going to be implemented is beneficial.
Okay, thank you. If we go to Policy 12, the sub-Roman numeral 2, it talks about the measure relates to the contaminants giving rise to the residual adverse effects. And would you say that that's similar to the offsetting principle of like for like?
Yes, I think it's appropriate that any offsetting is seeking to offset a similar contaminant to what is being discharged.
Would you say that nutrient trading doesn't align with that provision?
I think that nutrient trading, if in the context of betterment being delivered to the Waipa and Waikato River catchments, is being delivered through nutrient trading, I do think that it can be applied under that.
Have you read Dr. Corkery's evidence?
Not in detail, but I have skimmed through it, yes.
So she says that, in her opinion, and this is her last paragraph, 93, implementation of a method to deal with residual adverse effects from point or diffuse discharges, and then she needs to, and then she lists many matters that it would need to do, and then the last one is be transparent that proposed nutrient trading may not align with the principles of offsetting and compensation, and as such cannot provide confidence that aquatic values will not decrease in either extent or condition.
I can't speak to the water quality components. My colleague, Mr. Kirk, yesterday discussed that in his evidence also. I would reiterate that, as outlined in Plan Change 1, there are different freshwater management units throughout the Waikato catchment and Waipa River catchments, whereby different contaminants might be of more importance for being addressed than others.
But unlike some other contaminants, my understanding is nitrogen and phosphorus don't break down so that they all end up in the same place.
I'd defer to a water quality expert on that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
mind?
No, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Re-examination?
No, Your Honour. Good morning, Mr. Harrelman.
Good morning.
I'd just like to say this is a very impressive outcome for our wastewater treatment plant. I was familiar with the old Cambridge treatment plant, and this is a massive change. I think everyone involved needs to be complimented on this kind of outcome. And I wasn't sure whether I should do this or not, but I will. One of the benefits of a wastewater treatment plant that most of you will not be aware of, and you may want to keep it in mind for the future. On one wastewater treatment plant I worked on, a gentleman lost his false teeth down the toilet. And he actually went down to the treatment plant, realizing where it would end up. And the treatment plant operators were very diligent. They kept all the McDonald's toys, the false teeth, and certain forms of underwear. And when he went down there, he was able to go through the false teeth that were there, picked out a set that he thought looked like his own, give them a quick swill under the tap, put them back in his mouth, and off he went, a very happy chap. So when you do your next resource consents for wastewater treatment plants, just keep that in mind. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honour, for your patience.
Now, Mr. Hamilton, do you want to offer a reaction?
A lot of stuff goes down wastewater treatment or into wastewater treatment plants.
I think that in terms of an analysis of the benefits and costs of wastewater treatment, that is, as you say, Commissioner, sometimes unheralded benefits.
Well, I just shared, Your Honour, because it's amused me on many occasions.
Given that there wasn't a question, I don't know that I'm going to invite people to address anything arising from that. Is there anything arising? Oh, Mr. Malone? No. Thank you very much for your evidence, Mr. Hamilton.
And that concludes the presentation of the case.
Yes.
Of the Mr. Council, Your Honour.
Thank you very much, Mr. Malone. All right. Genesis Energy. Ms. Garvin, ready to go?
Yes, Your Honour.
Thank you. Now, let's just make sure that you get the microphone.
So Genesis' involvement with Plan Change 1 has been concerned with ensuring that the regional plan enables the operation and development of its electricity generation infrastructure to meet New Zealand's current and future electricity needs. The operation of the Huntly Power Station includes discharges to the Waikato River as a result of on-site processes. Genesis' concerns have largely been addressed. And there's just three key issues outstanding, which is similar to those of OG. So first, the hierarchy proposed for point source discharges in policies 11, 12 and 13. Secondly, the proposed addition of the phrase, any appropriate reasonable mixing, and related to that, the location of this within policy 12. And thirdly, whether a cross-reference to section 107 subsection 2 of the RMA is appropriate. So just turning to that first issue around the proposed hierarchy for point source discharge policies, Genesis considers that the policy should not be seen as a hierarchy, with one being more important than the other for the reasons set out in the evidence of Mr. Matthews and Dr. Mitchell for OG. A hierarchy is unnecessary when each policy should be considered by a decision maker to the extent that it is relevant to a particular application and interpreted in a manner that gives effect to the objectives of Plan Change 1 and Te Tiriti Whaimana. In Mr. Matthews' expert opinion, removing the cross-references in the policies would lead to more efficient and effective wording to achieve the objectives of Plan Change 1.
Yesterday we heard from Mr. Chabalco initially under cross-examination where he described policy 12 as a bottom line. And I think that highlights the concern that policy 11 may not be considered at all if policy 12 is not satisfied. I will note later on Mr. Chabalco accepted that all policies are relevant when considering an application for residents' consent. So Genesis considers that the position of policy 11 at the bottom of the hierarchy significantly weakens the policy and its important directive that the continued operation and development of regionally significant infrastructure and regionally significant industry should be provided for. Genesis therefore seeks the removal of the words subject to policies 12 and 13 and subject to policy 12 and policies 11 and 13 respectively. So turning now to the issue of reasonable mixing, which we've traversed in detail. I won't read all of the submissions, but I just wanted to highlight first that Genesis' position, I think, aligns with that of Commissioner Hodges in terms of how we see it as it's a two-stage assessment. So first, consideration of what the best practicable option is and whether it should even be a discharge. I think that goes to Judge Williams' points around whether a discharge is even appropriate in terms of if it's in a wahitapi area. And so that should be the first consideration.
So should we be also adding at that point that the best practicable option is appropriate? Because if you can have a best practicable option, and someone else can tell me I'm wrong, in terms of whether it's that's the best option to discharge, but whether it's appropriate to discharge it at that particular point is another component. So should that be an addition to the terminology?
I'm not sure whether it should be an addition to the terminology, Your Honour, but I do think there should be a step of saying, is it appropriate to have a discharge at all? And if it is, what's the best practicable option? Followed by, if there's going to be a discharge, what's a reasonable mixing zone?
There's two components to that, though, isn't there, Council? There's the best practicable option from the perspective of the business, of the entity, and then there's the best practicable option in terms of whether it's appropriate to locate it at where it's intended to be.
Yeah.
That's that second part, which I think there's a missing component.
And I think in terms of that second part, that consideration is not necessarily tied to the consideration of what the best practicable option is in terms of the considerations that are normally typically looked at in the definition of the BPO, which we do set out in our submissions. So it's defined, so just turning to para 23 of my submissions, the BPO is defined in the regional plan and the RMA in relation to a discharge of a contaminant means the best method for preventing or minimising the adverse effects on the environment, having regard to, among other things, the nature of the discharge or the emission and sensitivity of the receiving environment to adverse effects, the financial implications and the effects on the environment of that option when compared with other options, and the current state of knowledge and the likelihood that the option can be successfully applied. But I think what you are driving at is actually potentially other considerations that decision makers would need to consider and assess at the outset as to whether there should even it's appropriate for there to be any discharge, almost regardless of what the BPO is and what the reasonable mixing zone is. So in a way, I said it was maybe a two-stage assessment, but you could conceptualise it as a three-stage assessment of what's appropriate, what is the BPO, and then what is a reasonable mixing zone if there is to be a discharge.
Yeah, I think that's a better reflection of what I'm trying to get at.
I've always thought that, the nature of the discharge and the sensitivity of the receiving environment, I mean, that brings those two together. The nature of the discharge can include whether there should be a discharge at all, whether it's a given that there should be a discharge. The sensitivity of the receiving environment means why you're choosing to discharge it here. I mean, just bear in mind that BPO is applied to a range of different activities, and I think that there should be that the breadth of both the substance that is being discharged and where it's being discharged should always be questions. I mean, I'm not disagreeing, Your Honour, with what highlight. I suppose I'm saying that, and this is one of the problems with compendious legislation like the RMA, is that sometimes the phrases turn into slogans. And as one senior counsel once said, a slogan is an excuse for not thinking, basically, about what's going on. Yep. So I don't know that there's disagreement, Ms. Garvin, with the submission you're making, but I do think that it's important, particularly, and your client is in an interesting position in this regard, where we're dealing with existing activities which have existing discharges. I think the point His Honour is really wanting to drive home, which I think is correct in law, with respect, is that merely because you're an existing activity with an existing discharge doesn't mean it always has to be that way. And that can sometimes be a bit difficult for those with the investment to say, all right, so it really is a blank sheet of paper. We're not assuming that this activity in this location with this outfall are givens in the environment.
In Genesis accepts that there needs to be continuous improvement, certainly.
Better put far better than I did.
Let's not.
I just turned to paragraph 21 of my submissions. And so we've set up, Genesis has set up suggested wording in paragraph 12, and it considers that this is preferable to other proposed versions of policy 12A on the basis that it recognises that whenever and wherever discharge occurs, there will be a zone where the mixing of the discharge in the receiving environment occurs, which I think is well traversed. It removes an unnecessary layer of assessment that could prevent consideration of reasonable mixing. And that goes to the proposed addition of the word appropriate, which Genesis submits is not necessary, given that decision makers ultimately have that fundamental question of whether a discharge is appropriate or not, and it's not necessary to add that to the concept of reasonable mixing. And that it ensures, the proposed wording by Genesis ensures that the concepts of the BPO in reasonable mixing are not conflated, and replacement of the words after with and taking into account ensures that the obligation to prevent or minimise adverse effects in policy 12A applies within the reasonable mixing zone. And I think that last point and that last proposed change responds to the issue raised by Fish and Game, because Genesis accepts that you need to consider the effects within the mixing zone itself. So turning to the third and final issue, and this is around the Director General of Conservation seeking the deletion of reference to Section 107, subsection 2 of the RMA and Policy 12BI, on the basis that its inclusion would mean that point source discharge applications would not be required to apply offsetting or compensation measures following a BPO process, even if there are significant adverse effects to aquatic life. Genesis disagrees with this and considers that explicit reference to the direction in section 107 subsection 2 of the RMA is appropriate for the reasons set out in Mr. Trevelco's rebuttal evidence. We heard the concerns potentially raised where, understandably, the court doesn't want the planning instruments to be peppered with references to the primary legislation. The reason that we submit that it's important that there is reference to Section 107 is because we anticipate if it's not included, parties in the future will argue that Section 107 doesn't apply to point source discharges within the region due to policy 12BI. So the proposed reference to section 107 subsection 2 of policy 12BI simply clarifies that the provisions of section 107.2 can be relied upon without being encumbered by the directive provision of policy 12BI that a discharge must not have either significant adverse effects on aquatic life or toxic adverse effects. And we've cited a High Court decision in Te Rangatiratanga or Ngāti Rangatihi and Baiapinti Regional Council, which in our submission demonstrates that there's a high bar for obtaining consent where the effects in Section 107, Subsection 1 are present.
I mean, that argument just can't be advanced effectively, can it? I mean, as you said before you referred to that argument, the statute must prevail, and there's no way in which, there being no provision for it in the Act, there's no way that a plan, particularly by policy, could remove a statutory provision in circumstances where it applies.
I have considered that myself, Your Honour, and I'd like to say that that should be and would be the position, but nevertheless, we would envisage parties would argue that there is that reference to the primary discharge does not result in the discharge having significant adverse effects on aquatic life, and therefore saying that we were well aware of Section 107.2 and therefore there was a decision made that that didn't apply and it was an absolute bottom line in the policy's very directive.
I suppose the argument could be available because 107.2 confers a discretion rather than establishes a rule. The consent authority may grant a discharge permit, and so arguably the exercise of that discretion, as well as the high bar in the High Court decision you referred to, the exercise of that discretion would have to be informed by relevant plan provisions.
I think that's right, Your Honour. Nothing further in terms of my submissions. I would now like to call Mr. Richard Matthews.
Thank you.
Sincerely and truthfully declare and affirm that the evidence you are about to give for this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Mr. Matthews, could you please confirm for the court your full name is Richard John Matthews?
Yes, it is.
And you prepared two statements of evidence dated 28th of July 2023 and 11th of August 2023?
That's correct, yes.
And your evidence in chief sets out your qualifications and experience?
Yes.
And you were also involved in expert conferencing in relation to point source discharges and signed a statement dated 18th of September 2023?
That's correct, yes.
Do you have any corrections to make to your evidence?
No, I don't.
And do you confirm your evidence is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. Please answer any questions.
Thank you, Your Honour. Good morning, Mr. Matthews.
Good
morning. Now, I've got some questions for you centred around the joint witness statement you prepared on point source discharges, so if you've got that in front of you, that'd be great.
You've heard, yes.
And if you turn to the answers relating to policy 11, page 401.0171.
Yes.
And this is the wording subject to policies 12 and 13 and policy 11, and there's a similar reference in relation to policy 13 later. Now, in your reasons
in the third column of that table there, you've indicated that the inclusion of the phrase subject to policies 12 and 13 creates a circular argument in an unnecessary policy hierarchy when all policies must be considered in any event. Now, agreeing with you that all policies must be considered, would you agree it's open to the drafters of a plan to be specific about the intended relationship between policies?
Yes, but only to a degree that makes it clear for people who are trying to interpret and implement those policies.
Yes, and that's because in line with the Port Otago decision, it is helpful if any conflict or potential conflicts are resolved at the level of plan drafting rather than necessarily being left to consent processes.
My understanding, yes.
Yes. And so, stepping back to that core reason there, if there is a reason for the policy hierarchy, then it's not unnecessary in that situation and may in fact be beneficial for plan effectiveness.
In this particular instance, I'm unclear as to what the necessity is for the policy reference in that regard, particularly in the sense that if you have to consider policy 12 and go through that, and then after the event, then say, well, actually, I'm also considering this one, well, what effect is considering policy 11 if it's a relevant subject to policy 12 anyway? So what's the point of doing it? How does that actually help the analysis? I would have thought that in this instance, looking at the policies collectively gives you a far better idea of, yes, it's important to consider regionally significant infrastructure. Yes, it's important to look at how you deal with residual adverse effects from a discharge. But it's all also in a context where we're trying to achieve the objectives of set out in Te Ture Whamana anyway.
Yes, and that latter part of context is quite important, isn't it?
I agree with that, yes.
And so, in some situations, it may well be the case that applying each of the four policies, or the three particular ones, 11, 12 and 13 here, leads to no conflict whatsoever for a particular application, isn't it?
That may be the case, but I think we've heard even this morning about the difficulties with things like what is a reasonable mixing zone, what is an appropriate discharge, you know, is an existing discharge an appropriate one to be considering. So, yes, while that may be hypothetically correct, I suspect that there will always be some element of conflict that needs to be resolved somewhere through the process.
Thank you. And the way that conflict is to be resolved depends on what the policy is trying to achieve.
It depends on the objectives that you're trying to achieve in this case, I think, yes.
Yes. Thank you. Now, turning over a few pages to your answers in relation to policy 12. And the matters of disagreement on page 401.0173 is the discussion here of reasonable mixing. Now, you've heard the discussion yesterday and today in relation to this, and there's a range of ways to approach it. Is it your evidence that it would be necessary to consider reasonable mixing in relation to any point source discharge, whether or not it's referred to in these provisions?
Can you ask again?
If there was a consent application for a point source discharge, the question of a reasonable mixing zone and what that might be, in your experience, that would come up whether or not it's referred to in the policies.
My evidence is that if you've got a discharge, you have a mixing zone. So, yes, there would need to be some assessment of reasonableness there. And irrespective of Plan Change 1, the regional plan actually addresses that as well, so it's definitely part of the mix.
Yes, and so in terms of the wording that you've got your name beside there in blue on the second column in that
table, you've indicated a preference to refer to it in a slightly different form from Mr. Trevilco, but at the end of policy 12A. Can you please confirm the reason why you think that's a more appropriate way to do it in location than the earlier reference that some other witnesses have supported over the past?
I think the discussion this morning has clarified that to some extent, but my opinion is certainly that reasonable mixing is a matter that needs to be taken into account, and the residual effects that we're dealing with can actually apply to effects within a mixing zone as well as those outside. So taking into account reasonable mixing is part of that mix. It's not looking at them after reasonable mixing. And I think that's the subtle difference between the two.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman?
No questions. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Muldown.
No questions, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Muldown.
No questions, John.
Thank you. Mr. Minhin.
Thank you. Morning, Mr. Matthews. Just going to ask you a few questions in relation to policy 12A and 12B1. So in terms of policy 12A, following the questions you've just answered, you do say that reasonable mixing is something that should be taken into account through that consideration.
That's correct, yes.
And that in terms of the whole purpose of a reasonable mixing zone, it is to acknowledge that there are going to be some effects that are inevitable right at the point of discharge. Would you say that's fair?
Not so much that the effect will be inevitable, because it depends on then how you define that as an effect. I would say that it's really to take into account the differences that occur simply as a result of a discharge being different to the receiving environment. And reasonable mixing the process of assessing reasonable mixing tries to rationalise those. And if you look at the policy, it's talking about minimising the effects, so how do you minimise the effects and so on. So there's a whole lot of things, a whole lot of aspects to it.
Certainly. And so then in terms of policy 12B1, so policy 12B is around how to deal with residual adverse effects. And it sets some parameters for how, some provisos for the way that those residual adverse effects are addressed. In terms of 12B1, the decisions version simply stated that the primary discharge does not result in the discharge having either significant adverse effects on aquatic life or toxic adverse effects. Would you read that decisions version as applying beyond the reasonable mixing zone, or both beyond and within the reasonable mixing zone?
And yet one of the difficulties with that particular clause in 12 is that, as I read it, it effectively repeats what is a requirement in section 107 anyway, in 107.1. So we have a situation, if you like, where the policy actually repeats the legislation without the qualifications that can be applied to that in the legislation that come up through 107.2. Not sure where that takes me in relation to your question, but
I think that's useful in that. So you see the purpose of 12B1 as it was proposed was simply to recite the statutory requirements in section 107.1.
I can't say whether that was the purpose or not, but that's certainly how I read that policy. That's what it does.
Yes.
So the oceans of toxicity in particular.
In terms of the application of section 107.1, that is after reasonable mixing, though, isn't it?
I don't have it in front of me, but I think that was the clarification that was given this morning.
Sure. And so then with the updated wording that incorporates section, the reference to section 107.2, is it your view that the intention of that is to enable some potentially significant adverse effects that would be both within and beyond the reasonable mixing zone, provided that section 107.2 were met?
My intention was simply that option or that exception was available to argue. And I think as has been made very clear this morning, that exception is quite rare. I'm not sure how many times it's actually been enforced. I've been involved in two processes where, in my last 40 years plus, in two processes where that particular section has been relied upon, and I think there may be one or two others elsewhere, but that's the nature of how unusual that circumstance is, but it does apply.
Sure. And so then going back to the one as a whole, you don't see that as precluding the consideration of reasonable mixing where there could be within that zone some significant adverse effects?
Certainly, as it appears at present, in the decisions version, I would say that that particular clause would make it difficult to argue adverse toxic effects in the mixing zone, whereas the qualification to allow for some consideration of reasonable mixing in the preamble to that actually enables that to be that hurdle to be crossed, if you like.
Right, so in terms of that last point you've just made, as far as reference to reasonable mixing within the preamble, are you the chapeau to policy 12B doesn't include reference to reasonable mixing? Are you talking about 12A?
I haven't got the copy in front of me to exactly if I can get that. I can't log in at the moment. That would be helpful. It looks like it's coming out from all angles. So, can I just clarify that the version you just gave me is the version from Mr. Trabuco's rebuttal evidence?
No, it's the post-conferencing version. So
it's a slightly different version again. Yep.
Rebuttals plus the conferencing changes.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Just need to clarify that. Sorry. Yes.
Certainly. So if you go to policy 12,
find that.
Yep. Got it.
Yes. Policy 12A is saying use the best practicable option.
Yes, and it also includes reference to reasonable mixing. Yes. There's this debate about whether it's taking into account reasonable mixing, which is your wording and what's also supported by Fonterra, or appropriate reasonable mixing from the council.
That's correct, yes.
But within the chapeau to 12B, there isn't reference to reasonable mixing, is there?
No, there isn't. But that's despite the adoption of best practicable option.
Yes, so do you see 12A and 12B therefore needing to be read together essentially?
Absolutely, and I think that's one of the difficulties that we often have as planners, is that you can cherry pick the bits that you want out of a policy, whereas you actually do have to read the full policy to get the full analysis. And so it's not just a case of 12A, 12B, it's also C as well.
Certainly. And so in terms of then going back into 12B1 and the proviso that there would not be any significant adverse effect, do you see that applying within the reasonable mixing zone?
Would apply in the mixing zone, yes. Yeah. no toxic effect in the mixing zone.
Okay, thank you. No further questions, thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
Matthew, would you have a problem with policy 12B1 if you remove the section 107.2 statement and it only applies after the mixing zone? So the policy would say something like, the discharge after reasonable mixing does not result in the discharge having either significant adverse effects on aquatic life or toxic adverse effects.
I don't think that solves the fundamental problem that we're trying to deal with, that Section 107 of the Act itself sets some particular standards that must be applied to, and then provides an exception to that, and then your policy should actually be trying to provide some helpful guidance as to how that framework in the Act is actually applied in practice. And so I don't think you can do that simply by saying that the standard that applies in the Act can be modified by a small amount in this way.
The standard that applies in the Act, though, states that it has to be consistent with the purpose of the Act to do so. And if I can take you to policy 12B, which is after you've done your BPO, your remaining residual adverse effects. So the policy just says measures should be proposed, and then it goes on to talk about offset and compensation. Now, bearing in mind it says should be proposed, it doesn't say must be proposed. Would you agree that offsetting and compensation provides an opportunity where otherwise you may be unable to achieve the objectives of the plan to mana or to wai, to turiwhai mana, and otherwise the consent may be declined. So this policy actually provides an opportunity in circumstances where your consent would otherwise be declined.
Policy 12 certainly provides those opportunities, but I'm not sure that the change that you're suggesting actually addresses the point that there is a standard set that's repeated in more or less in that B1,
and
then that section provides to that, and that's what that inclusion is about.
So you agree that policy 12B provides an opportunity where your consent may otherwise be declined. The question is whether that opportunity should be available where you're going to have toxic or significant adverse effects beyond the zone of reasonable mixing.
The opportunity is, in a sense, a requirement to consider the residual adverse effect of the discharge and propose appropriate offsetting or compensation relevant to that. So it's not where those residual adverse effects occur, it's actually what they are and what offsetting and compensation should be considered for that.
Yes, but you'll be aware from previous experience of the concept of limits to offsetting, and in some cases you don't provide that opportunity for offsetting, do you?
But isn't that why this is a discretionary activity? That's part of the discretion of the decision maker to consider whether that offsetting that's proposed is actually relevant in the circumstances and appropriate in the circumstances. That's not something that we can decide here, it will or it won't, or nor will it be decided in the policy. That's the decision-making process that we go through.
So you don't think if you expressly put reference to the exceptions of section 107.2 in there, then that indicates, oh, we've got significant or toxic effects. We can say it's exceptional circumstances and just go to an offset.
It's certainly not a case of we can just say that it's exceptional circumstances. There's quite a detailed argument that needs to support that approach. As I mentioned in my experience, that's quite unusual and quite rare.
All right, thank you. Just briefly in your rebuttal evidence, you're at paragraphs 22 to 24. You talk about the offsetting principles in appendices 6 and 7 of the NPSSN. And you would be familiar with other plans that use or specifically refer to offsetting and compensation?
There are other plans that refer to them, yes.
Like the Horizons 1 plan, for example?
I am aware of the Horizons 1 plan. I haven't looked at the specific provisions in that recently, though.
And in your experience, when you refer to offsetting and compensation, you generally refer to it in accordance with the BBOP or business and biodiversity offset principles?
That's how many parties refer to it. I prefer to look at it in a slightly broader context in terms of what is the discharge or what is the matter that we're looking at providing some form of offset or compensation for, and then addressing what the relevant offset or compensation actually is for that particular activity. And I must admit I have some difficulty with the recipe book approach of the BBOP principles, because that doesn't actually allow for natural processes in specific areas or the particular requirements of particular areas where you can actually get considerably better gains by doing something slightly alternative that may not necessarily strictly adhere to those criteria. And
well,
that again becomes a matter of discretion for a consent applicant and the decision maker to make the decision as to whether that is appropriate in that circumstance.
Yes. Well, I'm just talking about planning documents at the moment. Are you aware of any planning document in New Zealand which has a bespoke offsetting policy or policies that isn't guided by the BBOP principles?
I think I'm not aware of any that have a bespoke principle, but then again, I'm not specifically aware of every plan provision that relates to offsetting and compensation either, as to whether they do actually refer to them. So I honestly can't answer your question accurately, because it may be not.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Tumai?
No questions, sir.
Thank you. Re-examination.
No, thanks, Your Honour.
Thank you. Your Honour? No, thank you. Commissioner Hodges?
Thank you, Your Honour. Good morning, Mr. Matthews. Just a couple of quick points of clarification, please. Does Genesis have a program of continuous improvement for reducing the 4 contaminants? Well, you've only got 3 as far as I'm aware. But
just to be clear, yes, only 3 in relation to Huntly Power Station, that's for sure. They don't discharge any microbial pathogens that I'm aware of. And yes, there is a program that their resource consents require them to report on regularly in terms of technology upgrades and things that might improve. They certainly look at, for example, the nutrients that are associated with the discharge. tend to come from cleaning materials that are used and for boiler cleaning and that sort of process in the station. So alternative chemicals is quite an important one to consider in that regard as to whether there are alternatives that can be used. And that's certainly happened over the last however long the station has been operating.
Okay, so there is an expectation that even small discharges will do their bit to reduce them to help
absolutely. Yes.
And
putting it in context, the four contaminants in this particular tangent are a very minor component of the Huntley operation. As I say, it's some of those process chemical things that are mainly that contribute to those chemicals.
I assumed that was the case. I was just trying to understand the
absolutely
you're working on. Thank you very much. Thank you, Your Honour.
Thank you. Mr. Matthews, in response to questions from Council for Fish and Game as only, you said at one point you had a difficulty with a recipe approach for BBOP, the biodiversity principles. In terms of making plans and going through plan changes, you would recognise the difference between principles and rules, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yes.
And principles can be called different things. Sometimes within the RMA, in plans, they may be referred to as policies. Is there much difference to your mind between policy and principle?
I think the difficulty comes when you apply as a policy, you will apply, for example, in this case, we may be talking about criteria that are specified, and that's where I run into difficulty. If the policy is that we will use offsetting and compensation as a measure, and as a guidance measure, you can look to those criteria that are in various documents, because there are different documents related to such things. Even in our national policy statements, I think there are subtle differences between how they're described. So, yes, if they can be used as guidance, that's one thing, but if they are defined as this is the way, that's where it becomes more difficult.
Well, we have, I don't know whether we trace it to the EDS and King Salmon decision or whether it started earlier than that. We have the idea of directive policies, don't we?
Yes.
And the question is how directive they need to be, and I'm not sure if you were involved a long time ago when an issue was raised about the extent to which a regional policy statement could particularly direct an outcome in relation to the metropolitan urban limits of the Auckland region. And the Court of Appeal said that a regional policy could effectively be a rule.
I recall that,
and Parliament, for better or worse, has never chosen to deal with that decision, so it remains on the books. As you say, and in terms of the new legislation, there's now provision for targets and limits, and I suppose those of us trained in a previous system might have thought that the targets and limits ought to be set out in rules. But possibly they could be in policies or principles as well.
I guess it's possible. My understanding of where we're heading would be that they are more likely rules.
Right. And without being overly deliberately old-fashioned about it, it does seem to me that we find ourselves in some difficulties, and we seem to have them here with policies 11, 12 and 13, about the extent to which these policies, which are getting quite lengthy, are turning into rules, aren't we?
That is a risk, yes.
And so the argument about where we then go in terms of Section 107, or more broadly, where we go in terms of a discretionary
consent is the extent to which the discretion is actually a limited discretion, and not limited in the sense of a restricted discretion, but limited in the sense that we can only take the discretion so far.
I agree with that, yes.
Now, the thing that seems to me to be a risk in planning terms is that section 107.2 could be characterised as a pressure relief valve in a difficult discharge situation. It could be seen as a way of recognising that there may be something that you have to do, even though you may have said in the comfort of a courtroom, so however comfortable it may be, maybe not the comfort of the witness box, where you can talk about these words in the abstract and you can say, well, no, we're going to set a limit here. And then we get a situation following an earthquake or following flooding where we say, well, we just have to do something. And how are we going to deal with that? And I'm just wondering whether or not, in planning terms, we're losing sight of what exceptional circumstances may occur. Is that a risk for us?
Certainly in terms of what we have seen over perhaps the last 12 months, I guess the response in terms of needing to change existing legislation, for example, Section 330 of the Act dealt with emergency situations before, but not the emergencies that we dealt with back in January, February. So we changed the legislation to address that. It's quite possible that those exceptional circumstances that we think about may become more the norm in the future. I'm not convinced, though, that the exceptional circumstances that are prescribed in 107 are actually that sort of exceptional circumstance. Yes, it may be that in the short term you need to take a particular action, but that would be quite prescribed as a short term. Some of the other exceptional circumstances, such as the situation that OG finds himself in with their particular discharge, are not in a short term scenario. It's quite different. The difficulty with that is, and I think Dr. Mitchell made the point yesterday, that he would actually prefer to see that 7 policy 12B1 deleted altogether, because it's already provided for under section, my understanding anyway, is it's already provided for under section 107, so you apply those things, and then we take that out of that part of the equation, but it's still relevant, it's still a relevant consideration. And that way you avoid having the need to refer to 107.2 in the policy itself, because the Act itself deals with that situation.
Arguably in 107.2, by setting them out quite separately and putting or in between them, a temporary situation is not regarded as an exceptional circumstance.
Not normally, no.
No. And then necessary maintenance work equally is seen as a separate factor that may justify the discharge. For example, needing to flush a system in order to keep it operating properly, so you'll have a discharge as a result of that. But it's better to do that than to have the system reach a point where it may fail, leading to more serious discharges. Yeah.
That's the type of thing, and I believe that's the type of scenario that Section 330 and all the A's and B's and
yeah.
many else's there are now. That's the situation that
They're meant to cover that. Now, as Ms. Omley put to you, it's important that exception not itself become a rule. In other words, a person, whether it's OG or anyone else, not say, well, we're going to trade on the exception. We're going to just operate. That'll be our standard business method, will be the exception. We can't have that either, can we?
Oh, absolutely not. And certainly in the cases that I've been involved in, that has not been the case. That is, it is a last resort, if you like, process to go down that pathway, simply because that's the only way that you can get through. The alternative is don't do it at all, or have that use that exception.
Thank you. Rising.
Yes, just one question that I can find. Mr. Matthews, are you familiar with the National Policy Statement for Renewable Electricity Generation 2011?
Yes, I am reasonably familiar. I couldn't quote it word for word.
And are you, there's obviously reference in there to offsetting measures or environmental compensation. Are you aware whether or not that is defined or there's any reference to any principles?
I'm not sure that it was in those in the original renewable EPS. No.
Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your evidence, Mr. Matthews. You're excused. I think you're next, Mr. Minhinnock, on the list. I'm just wondering if we've been going since 9 a.m. Can we take a break now?
Sure.
Okay. You're on about 11, and you'll be ready to go with your witnesses?
Indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.